This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Oh, hi, my name's Jeanette. Now, alcohol-free for around 150 days, which is a miracle, to say the least. I've been trying to go alcohol-free for about a decade, but now I'm 150 days in and absolutely loving it. Life is so much better. Being part of the OTI community has helped me vastly. It's fun. It looks at what you're gaining, not what you're missing out, which was a mistake I made before. I always thought I was missing out on life when I wasn't drinking. Oh my God, how wrong was I? Life is great without a drink. Just try it.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. This is possibly the best alcohol-free podcast in all of the actual Soberland. And basically, we sing from the rooftops about sobriety. We share the rubbish bits as well. And that's our mission, really, to normalise sobriety. It's okay if you don't want to have a drink. If you are just tuning in for the first time, a little bit about myself and Ben. My name's Sharon Hartley. You can call me Shaz, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. I am now officially, a marathon runner and 4 and a bit years alcohol free. Sounds ridiculous. All of it sounds ridiculous. I set out to take a break from alcohol back end of the summer in 2018. Thought I would fully get right back on it just in time for Can't Remember December. And then just so much changed, so much changed. I thought it was the best thing since sliced bread and never touched a drop since. I'll never drink again. And I am now chuffed to bits to be over 4 years alcohol free. It's brilliant. Can't wait to introduce today's guest to you. Before we do that, let me hand over to new dad, Ben. How are you doing, Ben? Look a little bit tired,
I am tired. Yes, I am Ben. I'm 34. I live in Liverpool. And Leo is wonderful. But the 5am feeds, I've taken the 5am feed. And it's really, like the weekend, I went to bed on Friday night. And I was like, oh, I get a lion tomorrow. And I was like, oh no, babies don't know it's the weekend. That 5am alarm is still going to go off. And I'm still going to have to feed him. But I love him. And I love being a dad. And it's great. And I'm sober. Over 2 years now. Love alcohol-free life. Shaz, I think this might be an awkward introduction to our guest after what you just said a minute ago. Because you do realise that, because I get it, it's part of your big intro that we're probably the best podcast, alcohol-free podcast in all the Soberland.
You realise
that our guest is a podcaster, has been doing it a lot longer than us. Your first podcast, Mandy, came out in May 2018, didn't it? We were celebrating 100 episodes a few weeks ago. You were celebrating 100 episodes a few months ago. Like a seasoned podcast pro we've got on today. Go on, Sharon, back to you for the awkward intro.
Right, okay. So moving on. I mean, there's space for all these amazing podcasts
absolutely
out there.
We are there just really one of many is incredible Sober yeah podcasts, Sharon.
Oh, Mandy, what a cock up. What a great way to start off. It's absolutely brilliant to welcome you to the podcast today. Mandy Manners, sober podcast host, coach, where to start? Tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, let's start with your podcast. It sounds amazing.
I have to say that, yeah, there's always someone before us and always someone after, right? So, you know, thank goodness. And yeah, when we started the podcast back in 2018, there weren't any in the UK based. They were all in the US. So I was listening to The Bubble Hour and I was listening to Jolene Park's Edit podcast and Holly Whitaker's podcast. And I loved, you know, the chat, but it wasn't British chat. And I was like, there's just something in that, maybe the politeness, less swearing. I don't know. There was something in the way that they talked that just didn't fully resonate with what was going on for us. So Kate and I, Kate's also a coach. We weren't coaches at the time. Kate was training to be a coach, actually. And we met on Soberistas, which is another amazing forum for sobriety. We were both kind of blogging and writing. And I said to her, do you want to do a podcast? And she was like, in that coaching spirit, like, yeah. And we're like, okay, cool. Don't know how to do it. So we started doing it from literally our kitchen tables and just chatting through motherhood and also kind of our sobriety. And it really, I think you probably know this, it helped a lot to kind of keep us accountable and keep us kind of on the sober path. Both of us had been kind of on the sobriety journey for about 9 years and had done a year and then gone back to drinking and then come back to sobriety. So it was quite interesting that we both had that shared experience and kind of breaking that down of like, you know, what happened? Why did we go back? What did we learn? And then kind of really embracing sobriety. So it's called Love Sober. So much on the sort of, yeah, same vein as yours, talking about, you know, what's good about it, right? The hard stuff too, but also like what we, yeah, just the transformational nature of kind of being sober and thank goodness for it, really. So that's us, yeah. And so it's been going 160, I don't know. I mean, I actually stepped back from the podcast in, I think it was May this year, just I had a lot of personal stuff going on. And living in France, it's difficult to kind of do events for Love Sober. So Kate and I decided she would continue doing Love Sober. And I kind of continued with my private practice. But I think together and separately, I think we're nearly on like 200 episodes or something. So.
184. And actually,
is it?
You saying you are in France, what we can say that satisfies everybody on this recording is that Over the Influence is the best UK-based alcohol-free podcast.
Put me because, out of this Mandy,
you are in France. You are in France. And therefore, you probably agree with Sharon's statement.
Yeah, I mean, I've never a truer word that has been said. Yeah, maybe let's go for we're the best worldwide.
Should we just move on?
Let's move on.
Yeah. Mandy, thank you so much. Great introduction. Really lovely to meet you. I'd love you to rewind, if you don't mind. 5 years sober now, 5 years alcohol free. But like you say, you've been on the sort of sober path for many years. And I think, in so many cases, that is how it happens, isn't it? You plant this seed, maybe your 30s. And then, I know I certainly did, but did bugger all about it. I just sort of really kept drinking, you know, thinking there was no problem. Rewind, Mandy, and just let us know sort of how you got to this point, if you don't mind.
Yeah. I'll go for the brief synopsis, which is always difficult, isn't it? So as you say, I think the first time I considered it, I was probably, 24, 25. And that's like when, you know, I met my husband. My husband's French, and I met his sister, who's a lifelong teetotaler, has never drank. And I was just, it just blew my mind. I just couldn't understand. I didn't know people like that. I'd never met anyone that didn't drink. And I started to be so curious, I guess, at that point. I was just like, how does she, you know, she's really kind of glamorous Parisian woman, you know, went to loads of festivals, read loads of books, successful career and didn't drink. And obviously didn't do anything about my own drinking at that time. But certainly that was the first seed. And my husband and I started to do kind of dry January or sort of take breaks just to sort of test whether we could. You know, 90s girl, grew up in the West Country, lots of kind of Glastonbury's and rave culture and lots of drugs and alcohol from the age of, I don't know, 14. So I think I was quite tired by the sort of beginning of my 20s. Had a lot of unresolved trauma that happened in my teenage years. I think in my 20s, I was quite hedonistic, not very nice to myself, was quite a lot of self-punishment through just kind of going off the rails and testing the boundaries of safety a lot. And that was kind of, I mean, it looked, it's not normal, right? But it looked quite like everyone else living in Brighton, kind of being in that community of people that were kind of heavy party people. And then we moved to France when I was 26. I got pregnant with my daughter, took a year off drinking at that point because, you know, the pregnancy and then breastfeeding. really, really enjoyed it. And again, then I think it was the stress and also the kind of trauma side of not really, I had a lot of fear when my daughter was born. And I think something triggered in me that I had to keep this person safe and I didn't know how I was going to do that. And I think that's when my drinking kind of ramped up. Definitely when I became a mum, became my kind of best friend in the evening. My husband worked away a lot. I was living in another country, didn't know many people. And then I went back to work. I was teaching in a university, so I was kind of really fulfilled in one side of my life. But then obviously that was meaning that I was not showing up so much or the way that I wanted to in my other side of my life as a mum. And my drinking kind of spiraled at that point, and also my mental health. And I got signed off with burnout, started going to therapy, didn't really address my drinking at that time, just thought it was, you know, okay. And part of kind of, well, my husband's French, we have a wine cellar. It was very much part of our relationship, not something that I wanted to give up, very much part of my identity. And then I kind of realized that maybe I started reading about brain health. I started reading about depression. I started reading about anxiety. And I thought, okay, right, maybe alcohol. Maybe it would help to stop, try to stop. Found it very difficult. You know, it kind of progressed, I guess. You know, when you're doing dry January and it kind of works, and then you give up like 2 days in and go, actually, that's not for me. So that's kind of where I was. And then, yeah, managed to stop. Found Soberistas, was kind of blogging online, met people online, did a year, felt fantastic, ran a half marathon, we left my stressful job, we moved to the seaside, you know, my depression got loads better, felt really good, thought, well, you know, I'm fixed, you know, I can drink like a normal person because all people drink. So started drinking again. Didn't look the same, wasn't at all as kind of catastrophic at that point, you know, but I just had different rules. So I didn't drink on my own anymore. But certainly, you know, was waiting for my husband to get back on a Friday so we could open that bottle of wine, still having those, you know, once or twice kind of blackout, burnout sort of situations every couple of months. Then went back and forth for about 3 years. You know, I'd have these kind of rules that if I woke up again at 4 a.m, then I'd stop. So then I'd stop again for like 3 months. And then my sleep would get really bad. My mental health would get really bad. And then I'd stop again. And up until I just had enough. I just had enough of the back and forth. I'd had enough of trying to moderate, trying to pretend that I had a normal relationship with alcohol and just... We're on holiday. It's always, I think, for a lot of people, well, certainly for me, I'll speak for myself, holidays were always big drinking kind of periods, you know, Christmas and summer holidays, no rules. And so we went on holiday for like 3 weeks, you know, Portugal, Spain and France, and drinking like lunch and evening, not loads, but just that kind of round the dinner barbecue drinking. And I just was exhausted. I was done. So, you know, same promise as I'd always had, you know, if you wake up at 4 a.m, that's it, you know, you're done. Did wake up, went back online, found Annie Grace's book, which I hadn't, one of the ones I hadn't read at that point. And that was just that last little click that I needed and was just like, what am I doing? You know, because I've been back and forth so much, which was like, I used to say to my husband, wasn't I happy when I didn't drink at all? And he'd be like, yes, Mandy. And I go, okay, thanks, la, 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 la. I'm not going to do that because, you know, it's that normalcy. Like, I want to be like everyone else. You know, if I can drink like a normal person, it means I don't have trauma. It means I don't have depression. You know, it means that bad things didn't happen, like all of that sort of stuff. And then I just thought, right, well, I'm going to have to just love all parts of me, really, and get the help that I need to support my mental health. You know, I take antidepressants, I go to therapy, and I don't, you know, I'm not embarrassed to say that I still have days where I find it difficult, but, you know, it was the best decision I ever made. And I think that's kind of what sort of pushed me to start talking about it, you know, out loud and sort of blogging on Instagram, because I just wish I'd known the link between mental health and alcohol. You know, when I was a kid, when I was 15, 16, when I was anxious, you know, socially anxious and someone had just sort of said at that time, you know, this might not suit you, you know, and maybe you just, you'll feel more confident in your own skin if you can just do what's best for you, which I think a lot of people find, right, is that that kind of juxtaposition of trying to belong, but at the same time doing yourself harm. That's certainly how it was for me anyway.
Mandy, can I pick up on, you've used a word a few times when you were talking there, normal. Mm. You said, you know, I wanted to pretend that I had a normal relationship with alcohol. If only I could drink like a normal person. I'm sure you've heard some of our podcasts before, Mandy, because as Sharon said at the beginning, this is probably the best alcohol-free podcast. But you, my relationship with alcohol, I didn't think that I had a problem with alcohol. But alcohol did cause me problems, and they're not there now that I don't drink anymore. My problem with alcohol was I was a binge drinker. So I didn't wake up in the morning. I wasn't physically dependent on alcohol. But if I went out, and Sharon, you say this as well, I drank more than everyone else. I drank faster than everybody else. I stayed out longer than everybody else. And sometimes that would be fine in terms of there'd be no consequences to that at all. I'd go out, I'd drink a load. I'd drink more than I said I was going to drink because that kind of switch had gone off in my brain. I'm out now. Might as well stay out for a bit. And there'd be no consequences to that at all. Sometimes I'd go out and there would be consequences because I'd say something or do something stupid that was out of character that I wouldn't have said or done had I not been drinking alcohol. So therefore you look at it and you go, but then is that normal? Is that abnormal? I think I'm a normal bloke in a lot of ways. You know, I don't know, what is normal? What is this normal drinker that you're talking about?
Well, yeah, and I'm glad you picked up on that because it was such a big thing for me. You know, and as a kind of recovery coach now and all the study that I've done on addiction, we know that addiction is, you know, a sliding scale, right? It's a progressive thing. It's not black and white. It's not like you either are your own. You're not, you know, it's something that progresses over time. You can have an addiction to something or a dependency on something, but not have a relationship with it because, you know, I'm dependent on my antidepressants doesn't mean that I crave them, right? So it's a complicated thing. And, you know, I was the same. I was a binge drinker. I didn't have an off switch. You know, I was always the party girl. That was part of my identity. I could drink with the lads, you know, I could drink pints, all of that stuff. And, you know, the World Health Organization doesn't talk about, you know, alcoholism anymore. It's not a DSM term anymore. You know, they talk about alcohol use disorder, which is from harmful to hazardous to dependent, you know. So when they were looking at that hazardous area, that is what's classified as, you know, drinking more than you said, it having an impact on your life, binge drinking, blackout, that's the area. And I think it's, I can't remember the actual statistic, it's in our first book. I'll just throw that in there. But, you know, it's hundreds of thousands of people in the UK are in that sort of part of the spectrum. So there's those people that, you know, will have a drink at a wedding to say, you know, congratulations. If there wasn't any alcohol, wouldn't think anything different. That's their relationship. You know, if there was no alcohol tomorrow, they'd just be like, oh well. That's what I, you know, might be a normie or a normal drinker. It definitely wasn't that. Yeah, what is a normal drinker? I don't think there is one. And I think that's why you have to look at, it's not about anyone else. And, you know, when you get out of that comparison and really look inwards about you, it's like, well, how is it impacting me? Do I like it? Do I like myself? You know, do I feel good or do I feel better when I don't do it at all? And, you know, that was definitely, you know, it wasn't to do with anyone else. It was just to do with what was going on with me. And what sort of dragged me back every time was because I wanted to be like my husband, you know, or I wanted to be like someone else. Does my husband have a, you know, normal relationship with alcohol? Probably not. Does anyone I know have, who knows? But does it matter? No, because it's actually just about me, you know, and making the right decision for me. But I think a lot of people that get into problems with alcohol do have a tendency to want to be liked and people please and just be accepted. And so we tend to push down our own needs to be part of the group. And that certainly was for me. And it was just like, that's the hardest thing, I think, that feeling of like, am I going to be alone? is everyone going to hate me? What, you know, how am I going to live? Which is why, you know, communities like yours and ours and the things that exist are so important, because once you realize that actually you're not the only one and your drinking can look like, you know, like mine or yours or whatever, it doesn't have to look like something, then you can kind of feel less alone, which, yeah, I mean, club soda was really important for me at the beginning, just because I like people, I like socializing. So finding people that you can socialize without alcohol, it was really key for me.
I think yeah. It's, I love this whole discussion about what's normal and normal drinking. And also what you said there, for me, the prospects of existing in a world without alcohol, Mandy, was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying. I didn't think it was possible. I didn't think I wanted to do it. I didn't think it would ever be fun. I'm just talking there about what's a normal drinker. What's a normal amount? I don't know about you, but when I first stopped, because I was a big drinker, daily drinker, like you, party animal, you know, alcohol just defined everything about me. People were desperate to know how much I drank. And that's because they wanted to use my perceived problem, that they assumed there was some sort of problem, as a benchmark. Well, if she's drinking that much, I'm drinking that much. And people use it to sort of work out where they might be on the scale. And I found that absolutely fascinating. The other thing that, I won't swear, really gets on my goat, it really, really bothers me, is how drinking... And I'm going to talk in particular here, speaking as a mum as well. And as you say, at home, at night, you get the kids to bed, all the rest of it. How that is completely and utterly normalised. Doesn't just apply to mums, to women. Applies to, obviously, every section of society. But just going off what you've said there, when does a bottle of wine a night become normal? Because you turn around and everybody's doing it, so it must be fine. But as you said, it's when... you realise that actually it's not normal. It's not normal for you. And I just found it so insipid. You turn around and then it's bitten you on the arse at the age of 44 and you're like, hang on a minute, I'm on a bottle of wine a night here, more so at weekends. Could never open a second bottle though, Mandy, because that would be wrong on a school night. So it would be a couple of large spirits. Talk to me about that and about how it's just also normalised.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things there. And I think there's, you know, something that we've been trying to kind of promote, you know, and as you are, is this normalisation of like sobriety as like a choice and as fun and joyful, you know, and something's being missed within the kind of medical profession, because they still do just, you know, I went to the doctors, Kate went to the doctors, and they were like, you know, well, here's the moderation wheel. How much are you drinking? You know, is it within these units? Stick to these units. And it's like, A, don't you think I've already been trying to do that for God knows how many long until I actually got the courage to come and talk to you that I think I have a problem? And B, it doesn't matter, right? You can be drinking, you know, not at all for months on end and then having a binge which makes you feel so much shame that you feel like you've lost connection with yourself for weeks on end. That's enough to say, I don't want to do it anymore. You know, you could be drinking not that much and it affects, you know, you wake up and you feel so unbelievably anxious. But because we only have this one kind of model of what it looks like, it, you know, it categorizes people. And so they're constantly asking, well, you know, I've got to keep within, does it look like this, you know, and it puts this boundary into making change. Yeah, interestingly, I grew up in Stroud, which is a small town in Gloucestershire, and Katie Ford, who's an author, she writes lots and lots of books about kind of romantic novels. She's an old family friend, and I spoke to her and she was like, oh, I don't drink anymore because it, you know, it makes my heart flutter. And I was like, wow, that's just so amazing. There was like, there didn't need to be any other story about it. It was just like, it just makes my heart flutter and I don't like it, you know? And so it's like, can we not just normalize all of that? That it just, it's my choice and I don't want to. And speaking to what you were saying about motherhood, I mean, that was a huge part for me, huge, because I think what happened on social media was, you know, when Instagram and Facebook first started, there was this real kind of perfect mum branding going on. You know, it's like, look at my children in Bowdoin and we're having lovely kind of cupcakes or whatever.
Don't even start me.
And then there was that kind of reaction to it, of that kind of imperfect parenthood of just like, you know what, this is hard, right? And yeah. So there were people, again, it's that thing of belonging, which really helped. You know, I can remember sort of looking at all these mumpreneurs and like bloggers, and they were just being honest about, you know, frozen fish fingers for dinner, and, you know, and I felt seen, and I was just like, God, okay, like, it is hard. It's really hard. You know, I had a career and young kids. It was hard, and a feminist, like, it's hard to do all these things. I can't possibly say it's hard because I've only just got, you know, a place at the table. Do you know what I mean? As a feminist woman. So I can't possibly tell everyone now I'm struggling and I actually maybe just want to be a stay at home mum. So all of these things. And then they would cheers it with a gin, you know, gin at the end of the night. And so me and my mates, we were like online, you know, Instagram, just like, you know, it's gin o'clock, mummy wine time, just like, and it felt like connection. It felt like bonding. It was like, okay, this is hard for us all, but at least we've got this to connect us, you know. What wasn't being seen was that maybe some of those people were just having one gin and tonic and then going to bed. But I was, you know, taking the bottle and sitting in front of the TV on my own, you know, scrolling social media, feeling really lonely and finishing the bottle and you know, maybe opening another one or God knows what. I was probably on a diet at the time as well. So I was like not eating, you know, and saving my calories for wine and, you know, getting myself into a state where, you know, blacking out and waking up at 4 a.m. and going, oh my God, I can't believe I did it again. And feeling like the worst human in the world, worst mum, worst person at work, you know, all of the things. So, and I think, you know, as marketing does, and like, I'm sure you guys talk about it, but there's a lot to be said for the environment and marketing and advertising and all of those things, because they picked up on it. It was like, here's a market, you know, let's make, you know, pink wine and pink gin and let's call things mummy wine time. And, you know, you can find unbelievable examples of kind of targeted marketing to that. And we're, and again, like on a physiological, hashtag don't get me started, you got me signed up. But, you know, on a kind of, you know, a physiological level, women at that time after motherhood are incredibly vulnerable to addiction. Because our nervous systems are completely dysregulated. We might have had birth trauma. We've had a huge transition in terms of, you know, physiologically. So studies show that actually the propensity to addiction or dependency or addictive behaviors or whatever you want to call it in early motherhood is a very, very kind of high risk group. So it's dark, you know, it's dark that, you know, our big alcohol target a group which is incredibly vulnerable in terms of stress, trauma and all of those things. So, yeah, which I guess helped me because I am a rebel and an activist. So once I learned all that, I was like, okay, fuck you, alcohol. I'm not doing that anymore. Sorry for the swear.
We are just going to take a quick, and I promise I will make this quick, a quick break from this fabulous episode with Mandy. What a great chat, Ben.
Loving it. Absolutely loving it. And you know what? It gets even better, Shaz. In fact, I'd like you to have a little think about this while you listen, because Mandy's about to talk about green people, orange people and red people.
I love this.
It's great. Listening to this right now, you've got no idea what we're on about. But if you've got a lot of red people in your life, just bear this in mind as you listen to the second half of this. If you've got a lot of red people in your life and you want some more green people, join the Over the Influence community.
It's chock-a-block with green people in there, isn't it?
Green people everywhere. Everywhere people, you look, it's full of greens.
Yeah, but people that you might have assumed in the past were red, you know, possibly an orange, they're all green. They're all green. I love a green person.
I love a green person. I didn't even know that I love green people until the rest of this conversation with Mandy happened. Yeah. Now I'm looking around and I'm colour coding everyone, Shaz.
Yeah. And I've gone through my socials and my alleged friends list. And I'm like, right, red, red, green, amber, red, red, red. Oh, you're on the red, you know. And what I love, actually, is when you get a green that's quite surprising. That you weren't expecting.
A surprising green. I love a surprising green. Or I like it when someone moves through the colours. Because I've had that happen. People have gone from red to green. Yeah. Look, you've got no idea what we're talking about.
We sound
about.
Like we're all losing become the plot, clear. Actually.
All will become clear very soon. But just remember this. If you listen to the rest of this conversation and you go, you know what, my life is full of reds, good few ambers, I need some more greens, join us. Overtheinfluence.co.uk. That is overtheinfluence.co.uk. Greens everywhere you look.
Absolutely. Exactly what Ben said. Full of greens. Overtheinfluence.co.uk. We said it'd be brief. Let's get back to the episode.
I'm really glad that we got you started. I mean, I don't know where to start now. And I've got to be honest, I'm a bit self-conscious. Shaz, I got some feedback on the podcast this week from my dad. He, like you, thinks it's the best alcohol-free podcast in the sober land. But he said to me that my questions go on too long. He said I talk too much. So I'm a bit, I've got like so much I want to ask you based on that, Mandy, but now incredibly self-conscious because my dad's going to go,
I'm loving this feedback from Ben's dad. We need to talk more about that on another episode.
Yeah. Don't worry, this is a safe space, Ben.
This is a safe space.
Ask what you need to ask.
In terms of the environment side of things, I'm really interested in finding out more about your glamorous Parisian sister-in-law.
Yeah.
Because surely it's not, you know, in terms of the French society, how much of French society is based on wine? I was watching Come Dine With Me yesterday, and there's a French woman. I'm from Birmingham, from Sutton Coldfield. And it was based in Sutton Coldfield. And there's a French lady who lives in Sutton Coldfield now. And she was very adamant she couldn't drink any wine that wasn't French. You know, it's such a huge part of that culture.
I mean, France, and again, I think this is what really tripped me up, because I had that kind of binge drinking British culture and then came into a culture where you drink with dinner every night and at every meal. So, you know, rather than when I was growing up, you know, we get wasted at the weekend and we wouldn't really drink that much at the, in the week. All of a sudden, I was then drinking every day, but, you know, with a mindset of drinking as much to get drunk, you know, and French people, I mean, it's changed a lot, and they blame, you know, America and the UK, because I worked for a long time at a university and they used to talk about how students have changed. But globally, alcohol is seen as something which is precious and something which is refined. So, you know, you have one glass of wine with this type of food and then you shift to another glass of wine with this type of food. So it's not, they don't drink, you know, I mean, there are lots of people that drink a lot, but they don't drink to get drunk. They drink as an accompaniment with their meal. And if you get drunk merry along the way, then so be it. But to not drink at all is very socially unseen. You know, when I was talking the other day, so I got a bit of an issue with lactose. So I was like, I literally am like the worst French guest now. So it's like no cheese, no wine, might have an issue with gluten, no bread, but just like come and sit and have a cup of tea. Yeah, so I do think my sister-in-law. Yeah, exactly. I do think my sister-in-law, she's there's not many people that don't drink, but I guess the French are pretty health conscious. There's many issues in France around eating disorders, like a lot of women have issues around food. So there's other stuff going on. All cultures have their thing. But if you if it's presented as a health thing, people don't really say very much about it, but they do feel quite offended you won't have one, you know. So it's different, but, you know.
The reason I ask is I don't want to know her reasons. What I'm interested in is the kind of the character that she presents then. Because, yes, okay, they don't binge drink like we do. They've got slightly fancier narratives around it.
Yeah.
Maybe. But, you know, it's still drinking quite a lot of alcohol over the course of a week. It's just...
Yeah, it looks
told
different.
And spun in a different way. What is she like? Like, is she unapologetically sober? Is it, like, not a thing that's ever talked about?
Like, yeah, I think of, because she's never... She yeah, she's never drank. I mean, she smoked... Like, when I asked her about it, she was like, oh, well, I started smoking and... really got into that quite heavily, quite quickly, and just thought maybe I don't need to, you know, put another unhealthy thing in the mix. And she didn't like how it changed people. She just thought it made people dicks. So she was just like, I'm not going to be one of those. So, yeah, I mean, I think because it's different, isn't it? Because it's that non-apologetic thing. Because it doesn't come from a place of problem, you know, she just doesn't drink and she's never drank. So she has no apology about it because she doesn't feel any shame. And I think that's something that I really worked on, that when I used to meet people, I'd be like apologizing for my non-drinking because I still felt shame about my behavior. And then once I sort of shifted it to be like, oh, I love it. You know, it's the best thing I ever did. You know, it's such a positive choice. You know, I just don't want to drink. Why would you, kind of thing? And took it from that. Then people just, yeah, people left me alone in a different, oh, I felt less vulnerable to people's questions, I think, because I used to just be like, oh, well, it used to be a bit of a problem. And, oh, you know, I had insomnia and, oh, and just like, you know, leave myself more and more vulnerable. And now I just say, oh, I just don't want to. I don't like it.
Takes time though, doesn't it, Mandy? Yeah. Because I spent first couple of years, you know, like you say, you're almost going, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not drinking. I'll be maybe back to it soon. These days, I couldn't give a rat's. No. I just don't care because it is such a game changer. We've had people, we've even had guests come on the podcast and they've said, we didn't believe you, you know, when you're talking about the joys of sobriety. Because when you do start out, in those first few weeks, first months, and in fact, we talk about this a lot as well, the first of anything, the first big night out, the first night out with the mums that you know from school, the first work do, the first wedding, whatever it might be, it's scary, it's different, it's a bit odd. And then you wake up the day after, you're like, oh yeah, okay, quite like this. Yeah. These days, Mandy, I couldn't give a hoot what anybody thinks because there's just too much else to be doing. But I think it takes time, doesn't it? It takes patience and time. And like we were talking before about that acceptance, you know, the group, the wine o'clock, you know, mummy drinks gin, all that shit. This Prosecco is run on laughter, love and Prosecco. All that nonsense. That's your little group. That's your little community there. What we want to do is just the opposite of that, where we're going, actually, yeah, it was great fun back in the day. No more. Over it. Done with it. It's okay to be in this group now, actually, where you say, those wooden signs, those little placards in my kitchen get right on my wick. I can see Ben wanting to jump in there.
No, I just think that actually being unapologetic about it is a really important thing here.
Yeah.
And what you said earlier, Mandy, about it's just about making the decision for you. Like, in terms of wider society, is it normal that I spend my entire working day in my slippers? Probably not. Is it normal that as a 34-year-old man, I've got a bit of a callus on my left thumb because FIFA 23 came out a couple of weeks ago and I've been playing it? Not, to be fair, that probably is quite
normal. That's a bit weird, actually. We'll come back to
that. It is, isn't it? Yeah. I need to.
Just the word callus was myself. Like, oh, God.
I apologise profusely, but I am also unapologetic. Like, I think Maz has put, we've got our community members watching this conversation, and Maz has just put in the chat box, that's an interesting dynamic, that it's more palatable for people when they encounter someone who's never drank rather than someone who used to but then decided to remove it. You know what I say to that, Maz? I don't think that's the person. I think that's what you're presenting. Because Shaz, like you were just saying, If you do that kind of, oh, sorry, you're leaving yourself open to questions. And if we want to normalise sobriety, then why the hell are we ashamed that we don't drink?
But it takes time.
It does take time. It takes confidence.
Confidence. Unapologetic confidence, isn't it? To kind of go, yeah, I do this. Yeah, I do sit in there and play FIFA until 2 o'clock in the morning because it's just come out and I really like it. Yeah, I do, and I don't care about it. Yeah, I used to drink and now I don't. Give a shit.
Yeah.
You know, if you're apologising, you're almost asking for people to do that kind of poking. Well, why? What do you mean? Do you have a problem? Because if you go, no, I don't, and you focus on the positives and you're unapologetic about it, yeah, I don't drink and it's great. What can they say apart from, oh, okay, fair enough.
And whose bloody business is it anyway? Do you know what I mean? It gets me cross. Man, well, get a word in, sorry.
What I would say to that on a kind of compassionate level, that I do think certainly, you know, a lot of the women that I work with in my private practice or, you know, myself, there was a big story behind a lot of my behavior and why I drank. And part of that was, you know, an adaptive way of, you know, survival that, you know, I needed to belong. And so then I needed to do what other people did. And if I didn't, then I needed to explain myself, you know. And a lot of the work that I've done on myself and I do with clients is around that, you know, assertiveness and being able to set boundaries and being able to say, you know, rather than saying I'd like to, saying I am going to, or I rather than saying I could, saying I can. And it's hard, right? And it takes confidence. And I do, and part of the joys of sobriety, but it takes a bit of a leap of faith, is the further you get, the more confident you get, because you're meeting your goals. So it's like, I didn't drink. Okay, maybe I can do this. Like I still didn't drink at that wedding. You know, maybe I can say no to Christmas with my parents because they trigger me and I don't want to be there, you know? So like all of that happens over time, but you're right, to be unapologetic is the goal. But I think it's not always easy at the beginning. And it does take just a bit of planning. And I, you know, worked on scripts. I was just like, okay, what am I going to say? So if they say this, what am I going to say to them? And it was that short and simple, no over explaining, just, I don't want to, you know, and kind of like seeing different groups of people. I think like we work quite a lot with that kind of red, orange, green. So red people just get no, you know, they get a lie, like, you know, I don't want to say anything. So people at work or people that you used to drink with, it's just like, I'm not doing it at the moment, whatever, you know. And then those orange people, those are kind of like, maybe they get a bit of a mental health story, or they get, you know, I'm on a health kick, but they still don't get your story. And it's only those green people. And actually, they might even not be your family. And I, you know, I was telling the wrong story to the wrong people. I was expecting them to be compassionate and understand when they're probably entrenched in their own drinking and weren't ever really going to get it. And actually, my green people, 99% are people in sober communities, because those are the people you can just go, I can't do it. What do I do? What do I say? And they go, don't worry, it's cool. Like, no shame. Like, we're all in the same sort of space. So I think part of it is, yeah, that kind of getting skillful at using or allowing people into your vulnerability who really deserve it, which I, you know, I spent my whole life trying to get people to like me, that people that really did like me, they couldn't even see me. Do you know what I mean? Because I was like, please, cool people, please. Or can I be any cooler? Can I, you know, do anything else to be more accepted? Whereas my mates who had known me since the six just going, we like you as you are, Mandy. Like, what are you going on about? But I just couldn't see it because I was so tied up with my worth being attached to, you know, how well I did something or how well I presented in something. So yeah, I'd love to get to the point where I'm in my slippers with my callous hands playing PS4 at 2 in the morning.
Ben's but weird.
I'm not quite.
It's only one of them. It's only one of
them. Okay, I'll work on that. So have some
Mandy,
goals around that.
I just want to quickly pick up on the colour-coded friendships. I think that's one of my favourite things that I've heard, because the greens can be so surprising. Yeah. I love this. I'm going to go through my Facebook friends now and colour code everybody. That is just genius.
I'm not sure that was the point of the exercise. But
it definitely is.
I love it.
Because it might be, you know, you might actually have a safer relationship with your hairdresser than you do with your mum. Do you know what I mean?
But be on the lookout for it, is what you're saying. And kind of, you know, when you meet someone, you can kind of go, Amber.
With my clients, we literally put people in categories.
I'm doing it.
Yeah, but is that? I like the principle of it. And actually, you know what? Some of our community members watching, Maggie said a few minutes ago, I always feel like I have to explain myself when I tell people I don't drink. You explained your traffic light system. She's put another comment in here. I love that. I can totally get the value of it. But Shaz, some people can surprise you. You might go through your Facebook friends now and put a few people on the red list, and you might see them in person and they might surprise you. You know, I suppose that's all I'm saying. It's a great idea.
Yeah, my thing with that is, you know, generally the people on the orange list, so they're the like, not sure.
Yeah.
At the beginning, when you're vulnerable, right at the beginning of your journey, they just go in the red list. You know, so it's like, if you're not sure, just put them on the red list. It's not going to hurt them, right? But once you get,
they don't need to know about the list, do they? No. Keep this private.
But once you feel a bit stronger, and you're right, because with my family, I just, it was red list. And actually they needed to know a bit more to get it. So then when I was like, you know, I've been seeing a therapist and I've, you know, I'm on antidepressants and I just feel better when I don't drink. They were like, oh, they stepped back. So you're right. Sometimes you have to adjust it a little bit and some people need some information. But as a general rule, I think we over explain and it's just a way of kind of protecting us because it can make you drink. It can make you, it can put you in that panic state of like, oh my God, now they're asking, oh, don't worry, I'll just go to the bar. Silly me, you know, just get me a drink, oh, sort of thing. So it's all around kind of protecting you, especially at the beginning.
I love it. There's some really funny comments.
You seen what just, Kelly said?
Yeah, the cheeky bugger. She says, we'll wake up tomorrow and Chaz will have 5 Facebook friends. Red, the lot of you, get gone.
You know what? The only reason I say, I'm glad that you explained the concept of the list. You know, people can move. But I just think, like, sometimes you can have really surprising conversations about it. And if our aim, both of us, all of us here, is to normalise sobriety, then you've got to be open to talking about it. Like, I remember... I think I'd been about a month in. I went to a barbecue up in Newcastle. One of my best friends from uni met a load of his very laddie lad mates that he now works with up there in Newcastle and ended up having an amazing conversation with this guy. I don't know him at all. And we had probably for about an hour the most amazing conversation, just the two of us, talking about all the different things that were great about it, things that were difficult about it. And, you know, he would be somebody who, you know, just meeting him, he'd be a red list person. But actually, 100,000,000% green list guy. Like, he is so green. It's like, I can't wait to see him next year at the barbecue. You've got to be open to...
Yeah. Open-minded.
Yeah, 100%. And, like, I mean, I've shared my story from the beginning on Instagram. So, like, you know, but it's easier for me to talk to... you know, the random and lovely general public than it is to talk to, you know, my brother, for example.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I think you're right. You can, I guess, again, it's how you frame it, right? So you had that conversation of like, yeah, I'm doing this thing and, you know, and it's working, but this is hard or whatever. But I think it's when you get those pointed, you know, why, you know, and can't you just have one? And what about a wedding and stuff like that? And so if you've got in the back of your head, like, okay, I'm navigating this party, this is probably the script I'm going to use with these people. I'm probably going to keep it really kind of, you know, simple and not go into much detail. And it's your nature too. Like I'm naturally anxious, naturally an oversharer. No shit, Sherlock.
We're nearly out of time.
And we need to talk about the bloody book.
Yeah. You know, so for me, like, this is core stuff, but it might not be for you. So, yeah, whatever works.
As Ben said there, we do need to talk about the bloody book. We are nearly out of time. Let's just mention that. You've written it with Kate, who sadly couldn't be on the pod with us today. Hopefully we'll catch up with Kate again another time. Love Your Sober Year, a seasonal guide to alcohol-free living. This just makes me think of autumn and settling down with a book in front of the fire. No idea where that came from. It just does. Tell us about the book, Mandy.
So it's our second book. So our first book, Love Yourself Sober, is a self-care guide for busy mothers. So it's very much around the motherhood questions. And I guess that book was very much focused on those, you know, first steps, that quit lit, like what does it look like, socializing, lots and lots of kind of coaching tools around kind of how you start on the journey and those kind of first year. The second book, I guess, was the progression for us as well. It's more around that kind of maintenance and finding the joy in it and, you know, longevity. So it's around the year. So every week you have a different subject and you have journaling prompts. And we kind of use the seasons as a theme because, well, there's different energy in each season. And as you said, autumn, it's like, you know, cuddling in, fire, you know, so there's quite a lot about creativity. There's a, you know, quite a lot about letting go, you know, the the leaves are coming off the trees. So how can we kind of let go of that shame or let go of kind of relationships that aren't working? And then winter, you know, it's that dying down, everything's dying back. So how can I, you know, self-care, looking after myself, making things small. And then spring, you know, it's those new roots and seeds that come up. So setting intentions and, you know, what you want from the next part of your change cycle, whatever that might be. And then summer is around kind of action and, you know, and overwhelm and all the things that are quite high energy. So it just, it seemed like a useful kind of anchor, I guess, to talk about all the different things that you need, all the different tools you need for a sober life, and just sort of frame them around the year and using the natural wisdom, because we are mammals. We are, yeah, we're people that work on rhythms. So how can we kind of harness that to live better? Because so much of it is because of stress and because we're just like, you know, high energy all the time, and we just don't permission, we don't have permission to pause. So, you know, if you have something where it's like, you know, and on a neuroscience level, you know, we can't make good decisions if we're in survival mode, if we're in that back brain, you know, we need the prefrontal cortex online. We need to be able to have that big thinking going on. And so just taking time to kind of sit, reset, think, you know, journal, look at stress management. There's, you know, all the different survival kind of states, fight, flight, freeze, fawn, which is a kind of people pleasing one we've been talking about. And also the different areas of managing life. So rituals around Christmas, how can we reframe it and it look different? You know, the overwhelm of the summer, how can we manage that? So yeah, so it's a guide to kind of pick up as and when you want or to follow throughout the year, week in, week out. It's highly illustrated. It's really pretty. The publishers did an amazing job of kind of what it looks like. And we wanted it to be a bit of a gift and just for people, something that they could feel. Because I think sobriety is about nurturing a relationship with yourself, you know, and part of that is just treating yourself nicely. So the idea is you buy yourself a nice journal and a nice glittery pen, you know, and the book. Don't buy it on Kindle. It doesn't work as well. That's kind of our recommendation. Actually get the book and really feel it. And yeah, spend time just working through different concepts to help. That's the kind of theme around it.
I love it. I think it's such a good idea because, you know, it is different. Like the journey does. And until you started talking about it then, the summer triggers are so much different to the winter triggers, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I think it makes perfect sense. I think it's great. We've got to wrap it up. Obviously, as Shaz said, it's lovely to have you here on the podcast, but we are one down. But would we have been here for 2 hours if there'd been two of you?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yeah, I think it'd be better to have Kate on separately. And then, you know,
I think it's probably worked quite well.
Yeah. I know that I've been taking the piss in terms of Shaz's statement at the beginning of the podcast. But you know what? It's we are still in the minority, aren't we, really? People who are sober, if we're talking about normalising sobriety, you know, we're still quite a long way off. And the ultimate aim of Over the Influence is that we don't exist because sobriety has been normalised, so we don't need to talk about it every week. But I think, you know, in terms of the space, there's so much to do still, isn't there? There's so much to talk about. There's so many people to kind of bring in and say, hey, look, you know, it's all right to not drink. So I think it's fabulous that we've been able to do this. Two podcasts come together.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I don't know if you know She Recovers. It's a big kind of organization in the US and Canada, and I'm one of their designated coaches. And they have a slogan. Well, one is that we're all recovering from something. And the other thing is, you know, collaboration, not competition. It's just like, I might say something to someone that resonates in a way that you just can't reach them. And again, you might say something that's just the thing for someone. And so the more the merrier, like just spread as much as possible, you know. And it took me Instagram, Soberistas, Club Soda, She Recovers, and Love Sober, and Claire Pooley's book, Annie Grace's book, you know, William Porter's book, all of those things to help me. So I'm just really grateful for your contribution to the space.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's been an absolutely cracking chat. Everybody you've listed there, they've been on the podcast. Honestly, the sober community is it's something else. And as Ben said, and as you said there, that there's enough love to go around. What do you say? Collaboration, not competition.
Yeah.
I adore that. I do believe you've got an absolutely breathtaking, amazing, world-class podcast. If you would, if you'd like to give it a plug before Ben shreds me again for how I introduced this. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, the podcast is called Love Sober. Everything's available on lovesober.com. If you want more information about me, you can find me at Mandy Manners Coach on Instagram or mandymanners.com.
Mandy, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us on Over the Influence. Oh, I loved, loved, loved that episode with Mandy. What a fabulous chat. And I thought I could chat. She can talk, can't she, our man? She was just brilliant. Really, really enjoyed it. And now, Ben, it all makes sense. Greens and oranges and reds.
Yeah. If you listened to that chat and you were like, actually, yeah, there's a lot of reds in my life. I need some more greens. Now you know where to come. Well, you knew where to come because we told you in the middle. But now you understand why you need to come to overtheinfluence.co.uk. Our community is full of open, honest, kind, just warm, friendly, cool people who get it. You know, there's no judgment in our community at all. There is no shame. There is no nothing. All it is support. There's no nothing. There's nothing there.
There's nothing. No.
There's nothing but positivity in our community because that's what it is all about. It's a very positive place to be. People are there for the same reason. They're to support each other, motivate each other, celebrate each other when they hit their milestones. Greens everywhere, Sharon. Greens everywhere.
Full of greens. Love a green. And you know what I'm seeing now in the community, and this is an actual thing, it's greens sort of meeting greens. And helping each other and real friendships are being formed. And these are people that have just jumped in over the influence, nervous, feeling a bit isolated, feeling quite lonely on their AF journey. I'm not saying that's necessarily the same in day-to-day life, but when it comes to the alcohol-free journey, they've jumped in there and they've put the little hand up and gone, oh, crikey, this is hard. And there are people hitting milestones in there that they didn't think possible. And it's because they've met other people within that community who are virtually holding their hand in many, many ways. And it's greens meeting greens meeting greens. And it's just, it's flipping marvellous. overtheinfluence.co.uk if you would like any further information about what we do. And if you want to ask me or Ben any questions at all, just drop us an email. We'll answer anything. You know, if you've got any questions about the community, you want to know a bit more about what we do, what's it like in there, just drop us an email, otihq@overtheinfluence.co.uk. Full of greens.
Right, Shaz, see you next week. Can we meet another green next week? Another green on the podcast?
It's a given, every time.